Fly with myself, Brett Mary. This week we are talking to Ailish McSweeney, Irish 100 metre international athlete. Ailish, welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Brett.
Tell us a little bit about growing up in Cork, getting into athletics.
I was always went to open sports when I was young. Myself and my sister and my brother used to run with our local club in Carrigtwohill. We just used to have a lot of fun, to be honest. Boys versus girls, relays and training, running through tyres, all that kind of thing, you know.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun, isn't it? And it's quite progressive as well, little tyre runs and moving your feet fast and everything. It's not too dissimilar to what we do.
Had you spotted something like that on TV? Or
no, that was just our coach. Our coach, Billy Deneen, had all these fun things to keep people interested, you know. And then the community games was a great focus every year, and we had good fun doing relays and that, and, you know, having a bit of a team element to athletics. But it was only when I was in school, really, and I met a coach called John Sheehan, who was also the Leavell sprint coach, and that he kind of recognised that I could probably be quicker, and he encouraged me to come up to the club. So I used to travel up to Cork City. It's about only about half an hour from my home in Carrigtwohill. Just started travelling up there and training, and kind of saw improvements straight away. You know, I started with as the girl who kind of used to kind of flail arms and legs all over the place trying to get down the track, and he kind of, you know, fixed my technique, and I got quick, made progress a lot faster once I joined Leavell AC.
What age was that at?
That was about 15 or 16, I think. I remember trying to study for my junior cert, and I was waiting on the side of the road for a lift up. One of my friends from school used to go as well, so I think, yeah, that's around 15, 16 years old.
Do you think you'd even have been potentially even quicker if you had started younger?
No, not at all. I think I might have done more events, maybe tried long jump, maybe tried hurdles if I'd been up at a track where they kind of had those facilities, whereas in our local field we just kind of ran and that was it. No, I don't think so, because you'd find a lot of people who are good at underage level tend to give up by college, whereas sometimes people who have a bit more success later on kind of have more hunger and more drive for it, and aren't really, you don't get as tempted by the going out and the college lifestyle as much. I don't know why that is, but it's often the case.
Did you play any other sports? Camogie, Gaelic football, soccer?
Camogie and Gaelic football, yes. Soccer, no. Basketball as well. And yeah, a bit of everything that went on in our local village anyway. So I did all them through school and enjoyed them. But by the time I got to, say, college, athletics was my main sport.
Your own family, how many brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers and a sister, and they all played sport. My brothers would have played, my older brother played football for Cork, and my younger brother was quite good at rugby, would have played, say, Munster A schools. And then my sister was also played football with Cork, and she was a very good sprinter as well. I think she probably would have been faster than I was, to be honest, but she kind of didn't have the drive for, she didn't really enjoy training, and she didn't really enjoy competition, so
she kind of stopped. Not a good combination for a potential athlete.
No.
At 18, you did your Leaving Cert, you would have moved on to UCC to study law. You kind of developing as an athlete, becoming maybe more aware of the fact that you actually have a bit of talent here. How did that period in your life kind of work out in terms of your studies and becoming, I suppose, an elite athlete?
Well, in first year college, I kind of did, to be honest, go a little bit with the college lifestyle, going out 2 or 3 nights a week. And then when it came to intervarsities at the end of the year, I think I came 7th maybe in the 100 metres. And I thought, oh, this isn't right. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm quicker than these girls, and here I am being beaten by 6 of them. So it was really only in second year college, when I would have been 19, that I took it a lot more seriously and, you know, started to never miss a training session and be a lot more dedicated. And that year I would have gone from being an 11.9 kind of 12-second runner to an 11.6 runner. So once I kind of experienced that little bit of success and that bit of progress, I kind of knuckled down, and from then on I was, you know, a lot more passionate about getting results and just putting the head down and training hard.
Obviously, it was with the university that you kind of first came to national prominence with 2 medals at the World University Games in 2005 in Izmir. 2 medals, you must have been quite happy with that.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was, you know, to win a medal is so precious in athletics in an international competition. It's very, very hard to do, you know, and I haven't had the opportunity of getting close to a medal internationally really since then. So, you know, I have great memories of that, both those medals, the 100 metre and the relay medal. And it was a great year for me. And we had under-23s, European under-23s a few months earlier that year, and I hadn't performed well then. So I was just so happy to peak at the right time and to be running fast times when it mattered.
So in 2010, you competed at the European Championships in both the 100 metres and the 4x100 metres. You missed out on a final place in both of them. How did it feel after that?
It was tough. I remember myself and my coach Sean had to go down to doping control after the missing out in the final of the 100 metres, and the final was on. That's when we were down there, we were watching it on the TV screen, and that was kind of tough. But at the same time, I had ran 11.32 seconds with only a slight following wind, which would have been a massive PB for me, a big national record. So I kind of, you know, put it all out there. I didn't really leave anything behind on the track, so I was actually, I have to say, I was quite happy with my performance. And I thought, see, from there I was going to build on that, so I was pretty happy. If I know what I knew now, that I would have been pretty injured since then, I probably, you know, would have been a bit more disappointed with not making that major final. But at the time I thought, 1/100 of a second, that's all I've missed out on, you know, this won't happen to me again, I'm going to build on this. And then in the relay, we missed out by 300th, and I was running the last leg on that, so it was up to me to try and catch up and get that qualifying place. So that was pretty, that was nearly more disappointing, because I did feel we had it in us to qualify for a final, and we would have been able to bring Derville in then, because she had her hurdles race that day. We would have brought her in for the final, and we probably would have smashed our national record. So that was pretty disappointing as well.
What's more important to an athlete? Is it a medal? Is it a time? Or is it a record?
I don't think you can say medals are the most important thing, definitely. But I mean, there's not that many athletes that turn up the championship who are genuinely in the hunt for a medal. So then, for them, it's probably qualifying through the rounds, trying to make the final. If it's not that, then it's your time. Did you pull out the best that you could on the day? You know, it's all kind of degrees of where you're at, I suppose.
On the domestic scene, Santry for the national championships, and maybe the Cork City Sports are probably two of the highlights of the year. You've had some pretty good success there as well.
Cork City Sports is really important to me as a kind of a building block. I always got a real buzz off it and ran good times there. It was the first time I kind of broke from being an 11.9 runner to 11.6 runner, which, you know, it's not a massive breakthrough, but it's a breakthrough when you're in your early 20s. And then, yeah, championships, national championships is something most Irish athletes get a really good buzz from. You know, there's something special about running here and trying to win that title. But the City Sports, and I must say, since they moved to CIT, it's a lot harder for sprinters. The direction of the track has changed, the way they run into wind every year, and it doesn't have the same buzz for me, to be honest, as it did when it was in the Mardyke, I must say.
Well, obviously, as a UCC girl, that always would have appealed to it as well. Some of your best successes have come indoors. Tell us about kind of what's the difference between an indoor event and an outdoor event, other than the fact that it's actually indoors.
Yeah, and the fact that it's a different distance actually. Yeah. The sprinters, 60 meter indoor and 100 outdoor. I suppose for indoors, the best thing being a sprinter is you don't have to worry about weather conditions at all or wind. You know, wind is a huge factor when you're a sprinter. It just makes a massive difference to your times. But then it's also for people with very good starts, 60 meters tends to be, you know, kind of one of your stronger events, because it's all about that drive phase, you know, that first 20-30. If you get out, it's much harder to be caught, whereas outdoor, a 200-100 metre specialist might have that strength at the end. But yeah, I find it easier to qualify for those events, the World Indoors and the European Indoors, than I have for the outdoor events. I think it's just the standard probably wasn't as high, and then, you know, that really kind of helped me for my outdoor competitions, just having that experience of going to major championships indoor.
London 2012 for you was one of your goals. Due to injuries, and I suppose mainly injury, you didn't quite make that grade. Is that a regret?
Well, you can't regret something, I suppose, you didn't really have control over. I had to have surgery on my Achilles in December 2011, and so that was only a few short months, 8 months out from the Olympics, and it just couldn't be done, to be honest. I just had an injury that had been at me for, I suppose, the 7 months leading up to that, and the surgery. I was on crutches, I suppose, for a month and a bit after the surgery, and then it was gradually getting back walking, jogging, running. So it just was never going to happen. I was still pretty optimistic that it might, even up to, say, May that year, I tried to run a race, but I couldn't even break 12 seconds just with what I'd missed out on. By then, it was
you make that sound
year.
Like that's slow. That's I know really, it is by your yeah, standards. Yeah. I know a lot of people watching the show, if they thought they could do it in 12 seconds, they'll be quite happy. But yeah. Obviously, Olympics are a completely different kettle of fish. Is Rio one step too far?
I think possibly. I've always thought if you want to be competitive internationally into your 30s, you probably have had to have success in your 20s, because otherwise how do you justify it, or how are you getting funding if you haven't had that success to bring you there? So I suppose that's the dilemma I kind of face. But at the same time, we kind of take it year by year. If I had a fantastic summer this summer, I suppose I might start thinking differently. But for me, it's just about trying to run quicker than I've ran before and kind of have a high, you know, that I can maybe go out on or continue on. I don't know which yet.
Obviously,
you studied in DCU for a portion of your educational career, and you met the one Brian Cullen, who is now your husband. Obviously viewers will be well familiar with Brian from his exploits on a GAA pitch for Dublin. How does that work with having two elite athletes in the household?
Two elite athletes, it's a great compliment for us. No, it works
national
great.
Champions.
That's true. It works out really well. You know, we're both, we know what each other's about. Like, you don't moan about someone going after training or, you know, saying, what are you up to this weekend? Oh, you have a match, that's annoying. You know, the sport kind of almost comes first. That's the thing you don't really question, you know, anyone's commitment to that. And then even in terms of, say, nutrition and eating, like, we both be trying to live quite a healthy, you know,
would you eat similar
lifestyle.
Things?
Yeah, more or less, to be honest. Brian's, it goes in, at some stage one person might be really dedicated and good and you drag the other along with you, you know, so, you know, you kind of discourage, like, when I had a week off there recently, I was 7 days off in March, and we've kind of 3 to 4 weeks off in September, and that's your only window to eat junk. So I probably had 2 McDonald's and a chipper that I was busy hiding in the outside bins, because Brian would not be into fast food at all. He'd be judging me.
You just told him anyway.
Yeah. I can tell him, a week or two later, but I don't want to feel the guilt straight after. Just enjoyed a nice chipper.
What's your own Achilles heel? What's your own sweet tooth?
My Achilles heel, that's a sore subject. But anyway, I know what you mean. Probably a can of Coke. I do love a can of Coke. But I'm trying out. I went off it for Lent there, and that's the only thing that will really stop me. So I need to kind of make up a self-imposed Lent, I think, from now to the end of the summer.
12-month Lent.
Yeah.
Izmir in 2005 was where you probably made your breakthrough in terms of the general recognition outside of maybe your own club and your own area. 2 medals at the World University Games. That must have been a pretty special time for you.
Yeah, it was a great year. I had qualified for World Student Games in 2003, but I was too late with my qualification. I didn't know anything, to be honest, about any international competitions. So by the time 2005 came around, I was much more clued in, and it was a focus for me. And I had done pretty badly in the under 23 European Championships about a month or so before, but it just happened that I had just managed not to peak then. But by the time the University Games came around in Turkey a month later, you know, I was peaking, and I was running as quick a time as I'd ever ran in my life. I was running consistently, say 11.6s. And got silver there. I was actually really disappointed not to win gold, though, because I'd beaten the girl who won gold in the semis. So I was actually really down about it for about a couple of hours, and then realised, oh, a medal is pretty nice.
Yeah, they don't come along that often for most people. But you happened to pick up a second medal on that trip. You ran in the 4x100 metres with Derville and Emily Murr, and I can't remember the fourth person.
Anna Boyle as well.
Yeah,
we had a great team. It was 2 days later, I think, so we picked up a bronze there as well, and some great memories of it. But it was a mad competition. Turkey's a bit of a crazy place for international competition, and I just remember it was an hour trek to the track. Every call room for the race was 50 minutes. So I did that by, I think, 6 times for that competition. So
a lot of that call room.
Yes, a lot of that call room, yeah, with all the rounds. But yeah, it was brilliant. You get a real good buzz off a relay team. It's so different to doing your individual event, so it was excellent.
It's been a particularly good period in the world of Irish athletics. Fionnuala Britton's successes, the cross-country girls with Fionnuala, obviously, Kieran O'Linard winning a medal at the in European Indoors, Derville coming fourth at the European Indoors and possibly facing a possible upgrade to a medal there. Is the future looking good for Irish athletics?
Oh, I think so. There seems to be great athletes coming through, and you know, you've got other gang, Paul Robinson, Mark English, a lot of young athletes, Sarah Lavin in my own event and the short hurdles, you know, coming through. And having 2 medals at the European Championships is great success, because, you know, it's been a little while since we've had European indoor medal success, and that's obviously a competition where Irish athletes would normally feel they can do well. So, yeah, I think in terms of the athletes that are coming through, it's certainly looking bright.
Okay, the new facilities at Athlone IT opened this year. It promises great things for indoor athletics, particularly maybe a training venue for athletes of your own calibre. How have you found the new facilities?
Yeah, amazing. It's fantastic to have. I can't believe it's taken this long, you know, in a country like this where we've such bad weather, where we do want to compete well in indoor events, for it to be until now that to get a facility like this, you know, it was a bit late, to be honest. But now that it's there, and, you know, it was the work of one man rather than, you know, any associations, Kiana Cahan, the president down in Athlone IT, having the dream of having the facility down there. It's just been fantastic for athletics. And, you know, you could tell in indoors an awful lot of the team who ended up going to those European Indoor Championships got their qualifying standard there, which is fantastic, because having to go abroad all indoors to try and get those times, you know, can be a big drain on you, and it might mean you come to the major championship a little bit, you know, beyond your peak. But being able to do those times at home, and just an hour from Dublin or 2 hours from Cork, you know, is fantastic. And they just seem to have done everything right down there, to be honest. It's a fantastic facility.
You mentioned that people would feel drained from the physical exhaustion of actually going around Europe trying to chase times. Also, it's an expensive proposition to move around the continent chasing times for qualification. Does it make it easier on the life of an athlete? Obviously, funds are never exactly the most plentiful in your line of work. How much of a pressure release is that?
Yeah, that's a great point. I actually kind of hadn't really thought about that, but you're right, all those flights and everything add up. And as an athlete, sometimes you're just so focused on getting the times, you don't worry about the money. But I remember shelling out, I think it was about €450 for a flight to a meet in Belgium, where I got a qualifying standard for the Europeans in 2010 and broke an Irish record there. So I never thought twice about that money, but it's a huge amount to pay for. I only stayed one night over there, I think, and flew back the next day. You know, it's a massive amount of money to pay to go to a competition like that when you don't have, if you're not being supported, especially. And without that stadium, athletes had no choice, no matter what level they are at. Now you'll see a lot more mid-level athletes who maybe haven't made an international breakthrough being able to stay at home and save money in their pocket as well.
The high performance grants from the Irish Sports Council were announced last month or so. How significant is that? I've seen different people kind of say different things about them. I know Colin Griffin has been very outspoken about being removed from the karting programme, whereas someone as Thomas Chamney has said that it's a bonus, that he doesn't rely on it to actually fund himself. What's your views on the whole thing?
Well, I'm off the scheme. I qualified for a grant after 2010, so I got one in 2011, and it allowed me to go full-time, even if not, it wasn't like a full-time wage, but it was a huge bonus. And then when I got injured, I got, say, half a grant for the year after as support, so now I'd be off it. That's absolutely fair enough, because I haven't done anything with injury to justify it in the last few years. So I can see what Chamney's saying when he says, you know, you can't rely on it, but some people don't have a choice, you know. Chamney obviously might have another source of funds, but not every athlete might be that lucky, you know. I'm lucky to have supports in my life as well, and people I know I could rely on, but for some people it's could be make or break for their careers. It's a massive thing, massive power for the Sports Council, the Institute, the High Performance Director to have in their hands. And you know, they're kind of, you're playing with people's lives, their dreams, everything, when you have that kind of control, and you just hope it'll be exercised wisely. I think Ireland's such a small country that they really have to take the personal approach. It's grand having criteria and applying it, but you know, it can't, to be honest, I don't think in Ireland it can be black and white, because you've got to, say someone like Derville, you've got to look at Derville, look at her past successes, look at how she competes in championship. You can't say, oh, well, look, last year you just got an A standard, so this is the amount you qualify, and that's that. And then that's the amount someone is getting who probably has never medalled and really has no realistic chance of ever getting a medal. Like, that's just a really, really bad way of applying funds.
Yeah, well, Derville's probably a good example, because to look at Derville from the outside looking in, like most of us do, between major championships, it can look like she's so far off the pace that people are kind of thinking, when's she going to retire? But that, yet when the championship rolls round and the final comes there, she's there on the starting block and she's ready to go. And she nearly always is there or thereabouts when it comes to the medals. But in the intervening years, there's issues with funding or whatever because of the criteria that's set.
Yeah, absolutely. But even in between, she's always an international class athlete and will get into events that other people won't get in, you know. But yeah, other people might just do their A standard once off. It's not that they're all on the pace every week either. They might have done an A standard once in their whole lives, you know, compared to someone who's got world, European medals. So I think from that point of view, it'd be great to have someone applying the money who's just intimately aware of everything that goes on at Athletics Ireland and knows history, knows the athletes, knows their coaches, and just is really invested in it and invested in success, really, you know. So that would be my idea of a high performance manager or someone applying funds in the right way.
In terms of youngsters who might be listening to the programme and are looking at maybe getting into athletics, they're reasonably good and want to progress down that road. What's the most important thing? Is it facilities? Is it coaching? Is it equipment?
Well, if we're talking, say, directly to youngsters now, no, it's just more about themselves and the passion and always doing what they think is right for their athletics, be it moving from a coach you've had for years to someone you think might bring you on a little bit further.
you know, which is a can be a big thing in athletics actually in Ireland, is just seeing when is it time to move on and make good decisions for you. So for an individual, that's what you have to think about. Just think about thinking about yourself, thinking about training hard and making smart decisions. Probably that might involve, say, getting into a college that where you also feel you'll be able to run and have those facilities and the equipment that you kind of spoke about there. So yeah, it's all about decision making, and it's hard. You might look back when you're my age and think you made a few wrong decisions along the way that might have helped your career. So it's just being kind of smart that way, but never losing sight of your goal of achieving that athletic success.
Someone like yourself has had some bad experiences with injuries. Any advice for someone who might be kind of getting a bit down in the dumps because things just don't seem to be going their way?
Well, even you, when you've been injured, you always look at other people who've come back from them and had success. Even looking at Paul O'Connell last week, I mean, he was so pumped that win with Munster, and he's just absolutely been through the ringer with injury and infection and everything in the last few years. Like, that's amazing to see, and amazing to see someone whose journey back from an injury has been worthwhile. But I think when you're injured, you have to kind of take control of your injury and treatment as much as you can, even though you're not obviously a doctor. But you need to kind of demand the best and always get second opinions if you're unsure. Find out, even get onto Google, find out who the expert in the field is. With my Achilles injury, I ended up getting surgery from a guy in Sweden called Håkan Alfredsson, who would, like, if you were an injured premiership player, you would be straight over to Sweden to see him and get your surgery. He has all those jerseys on the walls of guys he's dealt with. And I,
has he got the Irish singlet now?
He has my Irish singlet. He don't think he needed it. He wanted it, to be honest. He had people like Ibrahimov's jersey and stuff up, you know, and Beckham. So I don't think he wanted mine. But I didn't know he existed. And if I had known, I might have, you know, got better 6 months earlier, had a better chance, shot at the London Olympics. So now if I'm injured, you know, I realise this person I'm talking to, I'm sure they want the best, but there might be someone out there who knows even more, and maybe I need to go to them.
Your other half, Brian Cullen, obviously with the Dublin Footballers, is also in his day job involved with Leinster Rugby. Do you pick up much from either him or from other people involved in other sports or codes, or is it mostly kind of an athletics background that you'd be drawing your experiences from?
Well, my coaches are Sean and Terry Cahill, and Sean was a hurdler. He competed in the Olympics in Atlanta. Terry was the long jump record holder up to a few years ago, and Kelly Popper broke her record. So really, they're my main source of advice and guidance, and they're incredibly talented coaches, so they'd be my main thing. And then Martina McCarthy does my strength and conditioning, and she's, you know, a former athlete. She was at the Sydney Olympics, and, you know, I draw a lot from, she just is a fount of knowledge when it comes to strength and conditioning. But having Brian there as a sounding board as well is fantastic. I mean, he really knows his stuff, and it's great to be able to come home from a training session and, you know, tell him, oh, it went well and this happened and I lifted this heavy and it was great. And, you know, he'd be the same after his session. So we kind of more talk athlete to athlete rather than professional to athlete, you know, because that's, you know, when you're in a relationship, that's a better way to work it, I think. It's harder to take advice probably from someone that's close to you, but it's a good level of support to have.
How tough is it to actually have a relationship that we've spoken to a lot of people who struggle with that side of things, keeping friends and family a part of their lives. With one person in the family doing this, with two in the family, it must be crazy to kind of catch up with friends and family.
Yeah, we can tend to be very busy, but Brian more so, because he trains in the evenings. I have the luxury of training during the day, which is a huge benefit in loads of ways, but also in terms of your social life and being able to catch up with friends after their work in the evenings. So for Brian, I suppose he's probably a little bit more restricted. And plus with the team, you have to go along with what everyone else is doing, whereas I have that little bit more autonomy. If I say to my coaches, look, I'm going to Cork the weekend, I'll do the sessions down there, that's no problem. They trust that, you know, at this stage we can go about our business, you know, ourselves. So it's a bit different for Brian, I suppose. But no, we find it works fine. Sport kind of comes first, and we never hold it against the other if they have a match or a training session to go to. You know, we know how important it is, but also that it won't be forever. You know, we're not both going to be in the same position in 10 years time, so it's a temporary thing, and you kind of need to give it everything when you're in your 20s.
You won't be moving into coaching, or both of you kind of coaching different strands of sport?
God, I don't know, I haven't even thought that far ahead. We'll see. I don't know about that. I suppose it would be nice to get involved. But yeah, maybe it won't take up the same amount of time as actually doing it yourself.
My guest this week in the Sporting Spotlight was Ailish McSweeney, one of Ireland's top 100 metres female sprinters. Ailish, thanks for joining us on the programme.
Thanks for having me.
An absolute pleasure. We're going to give you the honour of selecting the music that plays us out this week. What have you picked for us?
I'm going to pick Phil Collins' You Can't Hurry Love. It's just a real happy song that I always have on my playlist before a race. It's kind of got a good rhythm to it, and I'm not really into the hardcore rap and everything to get ready for a race. I prefer it to be in a really good form, so that's why I picked that song.
Okay, well listen, as always, you can listen back to this and all the other episodes in the series on www.sportingspotlight.com. I've been Brefin Early. My guest, as we said, was Ailish McSweeney. The song we're going to finish the show with today is You Can't Hurry Love from Phil Collins.